the Hostile Zone, hosted by the infamous and dangerous and much lied about Eric A. Sinani. This is where public corruption, abuse of power, a waste and misuse of public dollars, and ultimately using your personal position for gain and power influence over others is met with extreme hostility. Otherwise, everyone else is welcome. Welcome to the Hostile Zone.
Welcome to the Hostile Zone. You're with the infamous and dangerous and always in your face, Eric Andrew Sinani. Eric A. Sinani, really big A. Who?
Eric Sinani, of course.
Right here on the Hostile Zone, yet another day, another dollar. I don't know with the U.S. dollar where it is, maybe a quarter. I don't know. Here we are, though, the Hostile Zone coming at you with another episode, action-packed as always. I'm your host, the one and only Eric A. Sinani, the one that pulls back that curtain, calls a spade a spade. I'm accompanied by the exquisite, angelic voice of Miss Bianca C., S-E-A, like the ocean.
Bianca C., that's me. Hello, everyone.
How are you today, Miss Bianca?
I'm doing fabulous.
Fabuloso?
Fabuloso. Been busy with organizing. And also, you know, Father's Day is coming up soon.
Father's Day in the house.
I'm trying to think of, like, what to get.
Now, tech. Guys, like, you know, depends. Well, he wears a tie a lot of times.
Well, the one thing is, like, how can you get something for someone that already has everything?
Right.
It is so hard to do that.
I know that feeling. So, let's start off with on the ticker. If you're watching on your TV, you will see the ticker below.
Right.
And you can reach us at thehostilezone@bbstalkradio.com. Thehostilezone@bbstalkradio.com. Mm-hmm. Eric Sinani@bbstalkradio.com. Bianca Sea@bbstalkradio.com. And always coming at you, Eric@ericandrewsinani.com. If you want to text the show, how do they do that, Miss Bianca?
Well, you could text us by 917-877-0171.
Wonderful. So there we are, folks. All right. So we have an interesting lineup today, conversation.
Okay.
May make people uneasy, but we call a spade a spade.
Well, is it going to get me hostile?
I don't know. Let's see. So we're basically...
I never know what comes out of your mouth sometimes. It surprises me.
Right. And I try not to tell you always at the beginning either. You know?
Yeah, because you want my natural reaction.
Yeah, I want it to be real.
I never know, folks. I find out the same time you guys do.
Right,
so.
Right. And I do. I kind of keep it from you. So with that, so let's... We're going to talk about... This. All right, let me figure out. I'm trying to figure out how to segue into this.
Okay.
Because there's a lot, and I don't want to fall into a sea hole. All right, so tonight we're going to delve into the tragic incident involving Brian Malinowski. He was, and I put emphasis on the word was, and you'll know shortly why, he was the executive director of the Little Rock Airport. He was killed during an ATF raid, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
Really?
And sometimes they add explosives down to it, but ATF, it's a federal agency. That's why I didn't want to fall into it, so hold that thought, so I can help people understand the different agencies. An ATF raid on his home on the 19th of March of this year. The story underscores a complex interplay between law enforcement and firearm regulations and individual rights, and raising critical questions about the methods employed by certain federal agencies, specifically here, ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
Mm-hmm.
As always, I'd like to start off with a relevant quote to the topic. Liberty may be endangered by the abuse of liberty, but also by the abuse of power. James Madison. Basic, that's a big one for the show, right? Liberty may be endangered by the abuse of liberty, but also by the abuse of power. One of our forefathers, James Madison. So, little talking points here on this. Basically, before we even get into talking points on the case, you have several federal law enforcement agencies that encompass the federal law enforcement realm. Mm-hmm. Your if we talked previously, your 1811, when I was talking about your series, 1811 series, that's your federal law enforcement. 1811 is criminal investigator. They use the word special agent, but that's really not, that's a working title. The title is criminal investigator. Okay. That would be an 1811. And an 1810 is an investigator. And then 1802 is your intel and investigative analyst type personnel. So we have several federal law enforcement agencies. Most notably, we know of the FBI. You know of DHS, Department of Homeland Security, which encompasses a bunch of departments in there, that has a Border Patrol, ICE, you know, Immigration, Customs Enforcement, Border Patrol. These are all federal agencies. There's other ones out there. There's a lot of agencies out there. Under the Department of Justice, DOJ, the Attorney General, you have the FBI, the Bureau of Federal Prisons, the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and you have the FBI, and you have ATF. Okay. You know, but there's a slew of other federal agencies. There are more federal agencies out there than I could spend multiple episodes if we wanted to discuss how many federal agencies there are, how many are duplication of services. However, right now, in the heat of everything, the ATF has been an agency that everybody has been really looking at, because what purpose do they really serve? Their job originally was alcohol, tobacco, firearms, et cetera. They monitor the sale and possession and stuff of that. But it's like a duplication because some other agencies are doing similar activities. Okay. However, that is not the discussion of today's show. We're going to talk about Mr. Brian Malinowski, who is no longer with us, who was deceased the day of the raid. So a little background on him. Brian Malinowski purchased over roughly 150 firearms in a 3-year period. And he would resell them at gun shows and privately to people who were firearms enthusiasts as himself. Understand when I get to explain, he's not a firearms dealer. Now, prior to the date of this incident, the ATF had rules of, if you were going to be a firearms dealer, you had to have an FFL, a federal firearms dealer license, to be a dealer, to sell firearms. But not if you're selling. Yeah, go ahead.
But being a dealer, that means that you're selling, right?
But you have to, it has to be your, you have to be doing it consistently. And it's come into question if it is your main means of employment, or is it a hobby? Now, at the time, though, that this was occurring, that this raid transpired, there was nothing in, they had not changed any rules or anything on that. Now, remember, 2A, the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution, which we have several copies of on the wall, behind me a hard copy on the wall in a frame and in my hand, two of them here. The Second Amendment says that the people shall have the right to bear arms and that right shall not be infringed upon. Shall not be infringed. And it seems that the ATF is the one that seems to be infringing a lot on these rights. So, okay, so he had these weapons and he would take them apart, clean them up, etc. It was like a hobby, you know, like a gunsmith. It was kind of a hobby. Mind you, Miss Bianca and folks out there, he was the executive director of the Little Rock Airport. So we all been to the airport. You know about security and you know about access and clearances and who's clear, who has a clearance to go where and access, you know, obviously highly background checked, right?
Imagine,
obviously, because he can walk out on the tarmac. He can do lots of things. So clearly he's not a criminal.
Right.
And we're going to get into some commentary and dialogue about that. But let me get through the history on this a little bit.
Okay.
All right.
Shoot.
And I got my notes here. So
go for it.
Wonderful. So six of these firearms, only six. That's it. Six. Six firearms were connected to criminal activity. However, word of the day caveat. However, they were used allegedly in crime, but they really weren't, because what they were in the the persons who had them, that he had sold them to either at a lawful gun show or lawfully to somebody else.
Yeah.
They were in possession of marijuana. And having marijuana and a firearm at the same time is a crime. So allegedly, he bought and sold 150 or so firearms, but only there was six of them popped up later on involved in a crime. However, in testimony given to the United States Congress by the chairman, Jim Jordan, Congressman Jim Jordan, the chairman of the committee, in testimony, none of these none of these weapons that came from this gentleman were used actually in the commission of a crime. So there so basically what they're saying is that they were not used, like basically pulled out the weapon, robbed somebody, committed a crime. The crime was very incidental stuff, being in possession of marijuana in your car while transporting a firearm is considered a crime.
Got it.
So somehow this ended up on the ATF's radar. But again, let me just say it again. They were non-violent offenses, basically marijuana offenses. So having a firearm in your possession and in possession of marijuana was a crime in specific places, right?
Wow. Okay.
This is what they allege, six of them. So he purchased these weapons, did whatever he did in his basement with them, all while his full-time job, where he made upwards over $200,000 a year, almost $300,000, the highest paid employee in that government entity. He was the highest paid person. He had the highest clearance. He ran the airport, executive director. He runs the airport. Just keep that in mind, because when we're talking about government agencies and security, you got the TSA, you got the air marshals, you got Homeland Security, you got all kinds of people involved in security at the airport.
He ran the airport.
Yes, he was the executive director of the airport. Yeah. So on the 19th of March, ATF agents had a warrant for Mr. Malinowski's home, and they served that warrant. Now, I'm going to give you a little backstory on that before we get into this, because this is going to be some backstory here.
Okay, so what's
not in my notes. The agents involved met a week prior or 2 weeks prior at the local Walmart parking lot. And, you know, it was like a pre-operation meeting.
Huh, okay.
And they did not effectuate, another word for you guys, they did not effectuate the warrant because he was deemed to be not home that first meeting.
Oh.
So they rescheduled it and came back and met again in the same Walmart parking lot, from which I've seen the video of them at Walmart, two different occasions having meetings. We're talking 10, 15 cars of agents. Okay, so we would see, they would look like POVs to people in the system, meaning privately owned vehicles. We're not talking marked vehicles. We're not even talking vehicles that look like undercover vehicles. We're talking like regular cars. And that's what they were meeting at, okay? They had a meeting the first time, and they were going to serve or effect the warrant, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. I've seen the warrant myself, too. I've read it. I saw it. In the checked-off boxes on this particular warrant, they were not going there to arrest this gentleman. He was not. It did not say to arrest him, did not say to place him in custody. He was not being charged with a crime. They were going specifically to look at what weapons he had.
So why does it take 15 cars to do that?
Why did they have to put in, here's a more interesting part. If he is indeed, and people are stating for fact, he is or was the executive director of the airport, and he was there every day, why could he have not been contacted at the airport? Or why
very true.
Or why did they have to go
escalated, yeah.
Right? Why did they have to go to the home when he and his wife were there? They could have went when he was at work during the day. If they wanted to gain access to the house, I'm sure the level of position that this man was in and the security clearance that he had to run an airport, I'm sure he would have cooperated.
Right?
And if he purchased weapons, he was doing it legitimately because they knew about it. I mean, it wasn't street stuff. They knew that he got these weapons. So they could have contacted him at the airport. They didn't. They could have went to the home when he was at the airport, and no one was home. The first time they met at the Walmart parking lot, they found out that he was not home, so they chose not to serve the warrant that day. So this is very relevant because they came, when they met the next time, they met about 10 minutes, quarter to six in the morning. They had their little meeting at Walmart. Again, I saw the video, 10 plus cars or more. And they had their meeting. Now they'd go to his home, and I saw a Ring doorbell camera, or I don't want to say Ring because it might not have been Ring. I saw doorbell footage or security footage from neighboring homes.
Oh, okay.
And you saw these vehicles flying by at high speeds, heading to his home in the dark, people.
So they were doing it at high speed, so they're breaking the community.
Possibly.
Speed limit?
I don't know if it was that much of an emergency either, right? But anyway, I mean, that's great for conversation. Let me get through the facts here. Let's roll right down the facts. So it was bright, like 6:02 in the morning, and at that time of year, it was still dark. Now, agents rolled up to his house, and they cut the electricity to the man's home.
Why?
So, I don't know. I guess you'd have to ask that of the director of the ATF, who, by the way, has never served in any law enforcement capacity, ever. Never worked. He's an attorney, and he's been a prosecutor, I believe. But he said under oath in the congressional hearing, he has never been on the street and served in the and done taken part in any of these types of things as an officer. So he can't really articulate what it's like to be on either side. He is a lawyer, though, an attorney, so he did know the laws. He says there's an investigation into this particular case. I'm sure there is, because I'm sure, for a lack of better terms, heads are going to roll over this, especially when I get more in deep on what happened here. So they cut the electricity to the man's home. And then the last thing you could see was about 50 seconds worth of a warrant, not even a minute there. They show up and you see them coming. You see on somebody else's security camera, multiple vehicles whipping up to the house. Then you see from the family, the Malinowski family's doorbell camera, that you see agents, several. It's hard to count because it happened so fast. We're talking more than five, maybe more than that. And they got a shield in front of them, the plastic shield. I don't even know why the guy is the executive director of an airport. Has no prior criminal history. He obviously has a good enough clearance to be the executive director of an airport. So they roll up with a shield and everything. And then the first agent or criminal investigator, whatever you want to refer to him, takes a piece of tape and slams it over the Ring doorbell or the doorbell camera.
Really?
Yes. And mind you, there's no power in the house. So I guess the doorbell was running on battery. At that point, on battery backup. So the tape went over the Ring doorbell or whatever. I keep saying Ring.
How is that fair if the guy has a body cam and you can't have the Ring doorbell?
Well, they hear better than that. Thank you. Very good point, Bianca.
That's Ms. not Bianca, fair.
They didn't even they were not wearing body cameras.
Really?
Not one of the agents or people raiding this man's home were wearing a body cam.
Oh, that is not fair. Okay. I thought body cam.
There is no footage inside. The only footage of this incident is agents rolling up or officers or whatever you want to call them, investigators rolling up with a big plastic ram, you know what I'm talking about so to protect your body. And then you see a guy's thumb with a piece of tape go right over the doorbell camera. Then, now there's no power, no electricity. The camera, and they're in bed sleeping, right? They break the door down forcibly. Wow. It's called a no-knock warrant. Most warrants, they, on the door. Police open up. We have a warrant. Not for your arrest. We have a search warrant. Because remember, there was no warrant for his arrest. Nowhere articulated in the warrant, written into the warrant, does it say that he needs to be taken in custody? Matter of fact, there's check boxes, and that box, all the boxes were checked off except for the one that said take him into custody.
He did not,
at least at this point, commit a crime. Even if these other six people were in possession of a firearm that he legally sold to them, side hobby, because his main form of employment was being executive director of the airport. That is what his means to support his family was, not building and gunsmithing. I guess you want to call it gunsmithing or whatever. So selling these, whatever the couple of them that were involved, they were not involved actually to hurt somebody. They were not involved in crimes of that nature. They were literally nonviolent, minuscule things. Somebody in possession of illegal substance and a firearm, that would make, that would be a problem. So, and clearly, since he must have done something right, because when they got the firearms from these people that did commit the nonviolent offenses of possessing a firearm along with narcotics, they were able to trace the gun to him. Okay. So he didn't shave off, at least as of we know, he didn't shave off anything. He wasn't shave off the serial numbers or make changes or alterations to hide his identity. He didn't do that, because they were able to link these guns.
So obviously he's not like a normal gangster that would do that stuff.
Okay. Yeah. So they go into the home. Now, mind you, now I want you to paint the picture, folks out there, if you're listening on the radio or afterwards on one of the podcasts or you're watching on TV. Paint this picture in your head. If you're a man or a woman, married or not, whatever, paint the picture. A smashing boom at your door, and you hear people come barreling through the door. You go to you look over. There's no power in your house, so you're maybe your alarm clock or a night light. There's no lights, so there's
devastating.
No power.
Right? I would feel like we were getting robbed.
That's
or something.
It. Exactly. So let me go. Here we go. I'm taking it to that level.
Okay.
So of course he was legally getting had firearms. He's with his wife in bed.
Of course. As a man, you gotta be. Like protecting your family right there, because
he jumped up. Yeah, he had no electricity. There's people not identifying themselves. They didn't knock. They're dressed in dark colors. I believe black. I'm not sure, but very dark. And it's dark. He can't see. And he has his weapon. There's you don't hear anything from the camera on the doorbell of them screaming law enforcement or anything. You don't hear that. So I don't know.
So they were probably deep asleep before.
No, but I'm saying you don't hear the agents or whoever went in. Even if they broke the door down, they didn't yell who they were. They basically, it's called a no-knock warrant. They just showed up and broke the door in and went into his home. Again, mind you, folks, the man did not have a warrant for his arrest. He was not being accused that he committed a crime.
At that shouldn't happen in the beginning. No knock thing and
they
no
could have
warrant.
Went to his house. They could have got him out of
that
work.
That could happen to anybody.
That could happen to anybody. That's what I'm saying.
OMG.
So exactly. OMG is very right. But it gets worse. It gets worse. So he then has a weapon and he's going to thinking he's defending himself and his wife. And he fires his weapon. Yes, he hits one of the agents, but he hits him in the toe, if I recall. Mind you, still no identification that they were a law enforcement officer. I would tend to think, this is just my thought, I would tend to believe if you are a agent entering the home, I don't know why you're not acknowledging you're there. Why would it need to be a no-knock?
Yeah,
but here's the other thing. The man has a great job and he has no history of violence or anything. They're there just because other people who had possessions of a weapon, and they didn't even commit anything violent. They had drugs on them and this firearm. But the firearm was legitimately traceable back to him, so he wasn't masking and masquerading and playing games, hiding out. He was very legit. So he fires a weapon inside his own home, which we have the right to do, folks. He had the firearm legally. Right? He legally had a firearm. Mm-hmm. And he's inside his home in the dark. There's no electricity. The power's been cut. And somebody just broke his door down and they're charging into his house and no one's yelling out who they are. What's the first thing that comes to anybody? And you're half awake, half asleep, right? Mm-hmm. So he fired the weapon. One of the agents got shot in the toe. I believe the toe or the foot or something like that. Very minor. This man, they fired this guy or this agent, I don't know, I'm not going to say names, fired back and hit Mr. Malinowski in the forehead, killing him instantly in his home with his wife right there.
Wow.
His wife was there, right there, when this happened. He thinks he's defending his
Isn't
home.
Isn't it in training that you would just shoot a person other than the head?
I don't
you
know.
You know, in order to like keep, if to keep them alive, unless, in order to explain
unless
what's
if you
going
want
on.
Them dead on purpose. Oh, but I don't want to go conspiracy
yeah.
theory
oh,
here.
Geez.
But I'm saying, like, why? Why'd you need to do this when his boss spoke to Congress at a congressional hearing, and he said they could have contacted me, they could have just showed up at the airport and said
right.
we're going to, we, or they could have just went to his home when he was not there. The real question is, but for they were at Walmart and had a meeting and were planned prior to this to execute the warrant, but they chose not to because he wasn't home. However, on the warrant, it said that he's not a subject to be arrested or taken into custody. So therefore, the warrant had no mention of actually checking him, his persons, patting him down or checking him. He personally is not listed as why they were there. When a search warrant is written, and a search warrant, folks, is a government document signed by a judge or magistrate, allowing, and it has to be done by affidavit by law enforcement to the judge or magistrate. And in the affidavit, they must articulate their experience as an agent, okay. what their background is, and what their belief is, why they need the warrant, and when they'd like it, and what it is they are looking to do with the warrant. Specifically, they're looking for certain items. Okay, they just don't arbitrarily come in and do whatever they like. The warrant must indicate what they're doing, where they're going, how they're going to get it, and why they're getting it. This is all in the a sworn affidavit to a judge or magistrate. With that, the judge would sign that. So okay. in there, it was listed not to take this man into custody. So I'm just going to go back and say again, and I'll say this 100 times. Why did they not just go the first time when he wasn't there? If the warrant did not indicate anywhere that he needed to be there to be arrested because he was not being charged with a crime, they were going to look at the, whatever firearms he had or whatever tools he used. I don't really know all those incidentals. I'm sure this will come out as time goes on, but they were not there to get him. So they gave up the first try to go and came back another day when he was home. Hmm. And then they show, it's dark in the morning, 6:02 or something like that, and they made forcible entry. So he was killed, right? And then to add insult to injury, his wife was treated, I can't even go there. She was there was no sensitivity or respect whatsoever for the wife. Mind you, her husband, Mr. Malinowski, who is now deceased at this time, by the hands of the federal government, by the hands of whatever agent pulled the trigger. So he's dead. The wife is there. She's not listed in the warrant either. She's not to be taken into custody or anything like that. However, and again, quote me if I'm wrong, but this is what I have. She was handcuffed and interrogated and was sitting in a car outside in the parking lot, outside in the street, and for hours in her night gear, whatever she was wearing in bed. So I didn't see pictures, whatever her nightgown was, because I don't think during this whole moment she was going to be running and grabbing a robe. I mean, would you?
No, I would have been like, what's going on?
The door
on?
Chops
like,
down, your husband runs out, he goes to grab a weapon to protect you and himself and his home. And now his shots fired, your husband's on the ground. What do you? I don't think you're going to go change into some better clothes.
No, I would have been worried about my husband.
So So then, she's allegedly handcuffed and interrogated for hours, and then she's outside in a police car, one of their cars, whatever car it was. And again, there's details change quite often on this, so don't bot and troll me. I'm going by what I've been given from my sources and what I was access to. Okay. Things might change. More information may come out. There are congressional hearings going on with this right now.
I feel so bad for the wife right now.
So, well, it gets even worse for her.
What?
Because
what
she's in the car, and now her husband is still laying in the house, right?
Oh,
and they're searching
so
the house
distraught.
Anyway. They're searching the house, right?
She must be like having an anxiety like.
I'm thinking. I don't know why EMS was not there, checking her out for shock or anything. But then she said she needed to use the restroom. And again, I don't know all the details, so I'm just going to say the basics of what I was told. She needed to use the restroom, mm-hmm. and instead of allowing her back into, even, you know, she's not a suspect of anything, mind you. Okay. She's not on the warrant. I just want to reiterate that over and over again. They don't even bring her back into her house to use her own bathroom. They bring her in a car to a firehouse to use the restroom at a firehouse while she's in her nightgown to be thoroughly embarrassed in front of everybody at the firehouse.
Oh.
Yet she was outside in a car, and the husband was wherever, I assume where he was in a different spot. But either way, there was, I'm sure there could have been a better bathroom option than bringing her down to a firehouse loaded with a bunch of firefighters sitting there. You know, it could have been a neighbor's house. I mean, she was not, she's not, obviously, if she was in your car, they checked her. She didn't have a weapon, right? Because you would assume that would be part of protocol, mm-hmm. especially if she was handcuffed, allegedly. I didn't see it, but that's what I understand. Was handcuffed and interrogated, interviewed, however you want to call it. I'm sure they'll call it as a casual interview. And if it was somebody else, you would call it an interrogation. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the fear of God is over her. Her husband was just shot. Does she even know if he's dead at this point? I don't know. You know what I mean? This happened so fast.
Well, she must be like, oh, so in shock. Right? I would be in shock.
That's
like,
what I'm saying. So
I wouldn't even think right. Because like all I'm thinking is, oh, OMG, my life is changing. My husband, blah, right. blah. You know what I mean? Like, OMG.
OMG is right. So.
Do they have kids or no? Because like,
I don't think so. I didn't see that. But here's the thing. Now there's multiple lawsuits have been filed against ATF challenging the new rules mm-hmm. of gun sales. Apparently, since that time, and I believe that, and again, don't bother and troll me, but when he was, there used to be called the gun show, a gun show loophole or whatever, okay, private yeah. sales. If you're selling
they have
to
a lot
one
of
person,
those at the South. I see like
yeah,
signs.
Gun shows. So if it's not your primary business, you didn't require a license to sell firearms. It's not his business. You know, if you had a firearm, you want to sell. It's like selling a car. If you sell a car, a couple of cars because you own a car mm-hmm. and you sell them, are you a car salesman? No, you sold the cars that you have.
Actually, that's a good point.
So he didn't need the license at that time. Now, maybe under the new rules, again, this is where the ATF comes into play. Okay. Because the Second Amendment, again, the people's right to bear arms shall not be infringed. The ATF keeps creating new rules on which who can and can't have firearms, who can sell, who can do whatever. So it seems as if the ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms are creating regulations that are tightening up the Second Amendment. So that's why there's several lawsuits filed. So I believe that they changed the rules to if you're going to sell firearms at all, you should have a license or whatever. And I don't know the specifics because it is all going as we go. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of fresh stuff that's going on. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that here's a man in bed with his wife. He is the highest paid employee for that area. I believe the city owns the airport. And he is the executive director of a very sensitive position that required, obviously, to have a good mental, mental thoughts, to be physically in health, mental, good health, all that stuff, all his faculties in order, mm-hmm. Fingerprints up to date, you know, knowing what they need to know about a man that runs an airport, because we know post 9/11, airports are a target. And they could be a conduit to create additional problems. So this man is cleared enough to be the executive director. So here's that man cleared in bed with his wife. He doesn't even know that there's even been, they've never contacted him.
No.
They've never contacted his boss or anybody and said, hey, let's talk about some of these firearms that were in possession of somebody else. And I don't know. I don't know much. I'm not a gunsmith person, so I don't know why you would purchase 150. But I guess if you are people who are car enthusiasts, right? They buy cars and fix them up and play with them and then sell them off. And the fun of it is fixing it and tinkering with the car. And then they sell it. It's not really for money. It's not a business. And Chairman Congressman Jim Jordan said right in the congressional hearing, He said it right to ATF and right to the boss of this gentleman, Mr. Malinowski. What was his primary means of employment? His primary means of employment was executive director of the Little Rock Airport. Done. That was his job. He was not a firearms dealer. He was not a firearms store. So this was a hobby. No different than many other people who have other hobbies. Now he's dead. And the wife had to be subject to tremendous trauma emotionally.
I bet she's never going to be the same again.
I'm very sure that this is going to make a lot of changes. They claim that there is internal investigations, but we really need third-party Office of Inspector General type investigation. And again, this brings question, what is the purpose of the ATF? I understand historically what their mission was, but it seems there are so many federal agencies now, and every one of them has some sort of law enforcement fashion. I don't understand why, what their mission is, and why would they need to go to this man's home at 6:02 or whatever it was in the morning, in the dark, take a piece of tape and cover his camera. And let's not forget, they cut the electricity. Why would he need to be in the dark? What were they worried about? What were they worried that he would do? He had no history of doing anything. They knew where he was every day. They knew the other morning when they met at Walmart that he wasn't home. So they obviously were able to figure out and discern.
Do you think with the safety, being able to see what's going on, maybe would de-escalate of what's going on?
Well, maybe if they just had knocked on the door and said, and rang the bell and was like, hey,
and announced
we're here with a warrant because of A, B, and C. We're not, I don't know. Again, this is going to come out. I think more people need to report this story. You're hearing it here. I don't know where else you might hear it, but it's fact. It happened. So look it up. And maybe more people need to question. It wasn't everywhere on the news. I'm making sure because I pull the curtain back and I'm telling you what's going on here. So this incident has caused great alarm in Washington, D.C. Congress is looking at this deeply. And they're looking at the controversial manners in which law enforcement act on some occasion. Now, here on the Hostile Zone, we are not anti-law enforcement. We happen to be very pro-law enforcement,
right.
Pro-United States Constitutional, pro-freedoms, pro-America, not anti any of the above. We're not anti-police. We're not anti-America. We are pro-law enforcement when they act as they are supposed to, according to statute, according to their oath that they took to uphold the Constitution of the United States. We support that when they do that. We don't support no-knock warrants on a nonviolent, I can't even say offender because he wasn't even charged with anything, they turned a nonviolent situation into a deadly situation.
What happened with being innocent until proven guilty?
But he wasn't even charged with anything, though. See, that would be a different story if there was an arrest warrant. Mm-hmm. On the warrant, there's a spot to be checked off, whether he'd be detained or arrested. That was not checked off. The judge did not authorize that. Or the magistrate, whoever signed this warrant, did not put, there was no X in that box. That box is left empty. It only says to search the house for these.
Officers should have.
So what was the reason?
Assumed and looked at the paperwork carefully before.
I think they knew exactly what they were doing. But I question how many people actually are comfortable with the after effect. Being somebody that knows how these operations go into play, know about what it takes place in the meetings, whether it be in a SCIF where it's secured for classification purposes, or if it's in a conference room or a Walmart parking lot. They are operations. They are there is, you're going to do this, I'm going to do this. It's like a movie script. This is how everything's supposed to go. The operations are put together that way. I don't think that they planned what they wanted that, but you'd have to ask yourself, as a regular Jane Q public, why cut the power and cover the doorbell camera if you're not going to arrest him?
That was idiotic.
Right? I mean, now a man's dead, a wife is traumatized, and, who knows with the lawsuits and who knows how many of those people that were on that particular raid are comfortable with the behavior. did they believe in that? Are they unhappy? And now do they feel they have to keep their mouth shut because of the thin blue line that they can't turn on a fellow officer, fellow brother, whatever you want to call it, brother, sister, that, you know, that law enforcement looks after each other, which I think law enforcement has to look after each other. Not against that. Right. I'm not against that. But there are times like this, when this man is dead, somebody has to ask the questions. Why did you use tape to cover the camera? And why did you go in the dark of night and cut the power to his home? And you did a no-knock warrant. You just broke his door down, knowing he has weapons in the house. So if anybody there on this team was an analyst and used a little bit of thought process involved, here's a man who you know has firearms. Mm-hmm. He's not a violent guy, but you know he has the power of deadly force inside his home. And in the Constitution, he has that right to utilize, stand your ground, protect your home. So why would they barge into his home without announcing who they are and then have weapons drawn, and then he has no electricity? Why would they do that? Knowing that anybody would assume that he's going to pull a weapon to defend his family because he thinks there's intruders that just broke into his house.
Right.
Or how about this? How about he sold some weapons at a gun show and somebody knew that he had them at his house? Maybe they were breaking in to steal them. Maybe he was guarding the weapons so you and I and the general public, they were not stolen and ended up on the street involved in crimes. How about that? We'll never know, I guess, because he's dead.
That's what I was thinking.
We'll never know.
Like a burglar would think that, yeah.
So in some basic statistics, in 2023, there were over 40,000 gun-related deaths in the United States. That includes homicides, suicides, and accidental shootings. The ATF reports a significant increase in firearms trafficked across state lines, necessitating stricter enforcement measures. I don't know. So I'm going to re-say that. 40,000 gun-related deaths. That includes suicide, accidents, and intentional. Okay? So we don't know the exact number. I'm sure somebody could get that. But 40,000 in 23 deaths. But that included suicide and accidents. And then, obviously, crimes. Now, the ATF is reporting that firearms have been trafficked across state lines. I don't know what that exactly means. Honestly, if you own a firearm, you know, each state has different rules on what you can bring a firearm to that state or not. So I don't really know where that is going, but they're saying they wanted to enforce countermeasures to the trafficking. Okay, that's great. But well, I don't know what that has to do with this situation.
What they just did, that was not a good idea.
Right.
Of like doing it that way. I feel sorry for the wife, to be honest.
I mean, I just hope that people pay attention and understand that what is the purpose for a no-knock warrant? And why did they need to cut the electricity? Why was the electricity cut to this man's home before they went in? And why did they need to cover the camera?
An average person, they're just setting up for somebody to freak out right away.
Right.
Because honestly, if you don't announce who you are, that person could, react the way he did.
I mean,
the average person would react the same way that guy did.
And if he didn't have a gun and it was a knife or anything or a pen, I'd buy a pen, right? Like I'm holding my hand next to my bed and I got no power in my house. And I hear my front door blow down and I hear somebody charging at
me. Automatically,
obviously, you go into defense mode.
Yeah, somebody's going to have a weapon or
something. It's called fight or flight.
Some sort. Like even like a golf club, they would have
a
baseball bat. You know what I mean? Like
it's called fight or flight. It's called fight or flight.
Fight or flight. Yeah.
You're half in your sleep. You're awoken in the middle of sleep in the dark, and further dark because now if you have an alarm clock, that light's not lit. You notice these things because we live in your homes, right? You live in your house. You know what should be lit. Little lights. Night light might be lit, a little light here, a TV light that shows the TV, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you'll wake up to a bang, your door's falling down, and then you know it is darker than usual. Mm-hmm. There is nothing in your house lit. And then you hear people trampling up your stairs. Of course, a prudent person, a stupid person, a smart person, it doesn't matter what kind of person you are.
Any type of
you're
person,
going to
really.
Be scared. You're going to be scared, and you're going to defend yourself and your family. You don't know who is coming at you. And that is really what is questioning here. I'm not questioning why the ATF went there. I don't know why they went there. I don't understand. And I'm not questioning why they wanted the warrant. Maybe it was a very valid reason for the warrant. We're questioning the manner in which this was executed. So on that note, Miss Bianca, you wanted to do a song. I want to get a song in before we run into the end of the time.
Oh, sure.
So we're going to bring it into Bianca Cam.
I love this song, Linda Ronstadt, Blue Bayou. So hopefully you guys will like it. So bad, I got a worried mind. I'm so lonesome all the time. Since I left my baby behind, blue bayou. Saving nickels, saving dimes, working till the sun don't shine. Looking forward to happier times, blue bayou. Miss Bianca, I'm evil. So what made you pick that song? I love that song.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I like it.
Actually, it was a request from a couple of days ago.
Right. Yeah, we get a lot of emails. And yeah,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is one of my favorites. Yeah. I love Linda Ronstadt. She's one of the reasons why I wanted to become a singer,
right.
To be honest.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
She's so great.
So, all right. So let's continue on because we're coming to a close shortly. So I knew this was going to be a very deep topic, you know, and I was just making sure that I got what I could get out there. But in conclusion, the death of Brian Malinowski highlights the delicate balance between enforcing gun laws and protecting individual rights. Okay. Yes, we need gun laws. And yes, we have individual rights. It's a very, very, very hairline difference there. But it's a balance that has to be had. It's a balance that maybe needs further discussion from people other than just me on this show. While curbing illegal firearm sales is obviously critical. We know that. Illegal firearm sales, we need to curb that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
But not the way that they went to the house like that.
Yeah, exactly. But the methods used must be scrutinized to prevent unnecessary loss of life. Okay? Yes, yeah. We are agreeing that we need to curb the illegal sale of firearms to protect people from getting hurt with firearms on the street. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we need to know that people have lives and freedoms, and we need to curtail and really pay attention to what it is that you're doing in these operations or missions, sorties, ops, whatever you're going to call them, to ensure that nobody gets hurt and killed in the process. Because if somebody does get killed, innocent people, one innocent person is now dead, and you're stopping, you're out there, what, protecting life, right? By stopping illegal gun sales, or so you're saying, but yet you killed somebody or somebody got killed in the process of that who would not be dead but for the actions of these agents.
Right.
So that's the key. But for the actions of this particular agency, the ATF, and the members of that team, but for those actions, this man may still be alive. That's crucial, and we need to memorize that. This incident calls for a reevaluation of law enforcement tactics across the board and very clear legal boundaries to ensure the justice and safety of every individual. Every individual.
Again, they really need to know about psychology. Like, honestly, an average person would be in shock if somebody...
Well, that's what I'm saying, right?
Does that. I mean, like,
there has to be more to this story.
How would you not think that?
I want to believe that there's something else in this story that we don't know, that was discussed in the SCIF, classified. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why they went that way. And that's why I'm not vilifying the ATF today. I'm just bringing to light this situation. I'm not vilifying them because I don't know what it is that made them go to that level of tactics. Because there are obviously many ways it could have been done. They could have spoken to him at the airport. Mm-hmm. They could have went when he wasn't home. They could have posted a car outside the house for a 24-hour period and known, okay, nobody's home. And they could have just went in. They didn't have to break the door down. They could have just picked the lock and went in.
Well, they broke the door down anyway. So what but I'm makes saying the they difference could have if they were home or
these
not?
These are what ifs, right? They could have done instead. So again, I'm not Monday morning quarterbacking. I'm just saying hindsight is 20/20. Looking back at 2020, you see clear. I don't know what these guys and women, whoever was on the team, were thinking at the time that they created or drafted the affidavit for this warrant. And what were they thinking at the moment they executed the warrant? And I'm sure that the person that pulled the trigger and shot him in the head, I'm sure that individual is suffering because they know that they killed somebody who was maybe not to be killed. I don't know. It's not for me to say I wasn't there. I'm not privy to all of the private information on that, but I can say that we need to look at stuff.
Well, they had two chances, so I'm sure they probably had plenty of time with the first meeting of what they were going to do.
They could have, right. Why did they need him in the house? That's really the question. Why did they need to cut the power? Why did they need to cover the doorbell camera? And why did they need to not knock on the door and just bust the door open? Three major factors here, folks. You need in the dark, no power, and him being home. Why did all it need to happen in that manner?
And no body cam.
And no body cam. And not one of them was wearing a body cam. Very good point, Ms. Mm-hmm. Bianca. Nobody was wearing a body cam. So now no one will be able to know what really happened. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we can only go by what they tell us happened. Unless if there's another camera in the home. Since when they cut the power to the home, the doorbell camera kept running. Maybe this man had another camera that they don't know about. Mm-hmm. Maybe later on we'll see some of that. But anyway, Sinatti's call to action. As we reflect on this tragic event, we must advocate for greater transparency and accountability across the board in all law enforcement operations at all levels. Okay? We need to push for reforms that protect public safety and prevent the loss of life while protecting individual liberties and protecting the safety of our citizens and the safety of our law enforcement personnel. Because we know that they get hurt and they get, this happens. So, a dangerous job. So it's a very, very tough thing. So join us in calling for legislative changes that provide clearer guidelines and safeguards on how these type of operations occur in the future and how constitutional rights are preserved and the safety of our nation is preserved and the safety of our law enforcement professionals are safe. We don't want to see anybody get hurt. At the end of the day, that is it. Nobody should be getting hurt. We don't know why they were there 100%, so I'm not vilifying the ATF. I'm going to reiterate that. I'm not vilifying them. I'm just questioning why it went down this particular way and why it didn't go another way. Nonetheless, I'm going to end it with a quote. The price of freedom is being eternally vigilant. Mm. The price of freedom is eternal vigilance. Thomas Jefferson, eternal vigilance. You want to be free? Always, like I say, 360, 365. Pay attention all the time. With that, thank you for coming to the Hostile Zone. Never miss an episode. You can get this show re-aired, or you can get us in any of your favorite podcast platforms or any of your social media sites. We thank you, because without you, we are nothing. All right, Ms. Bianca, final word?
Absolutely.
Final word is for you.
Well, I feel bad for the families that have gotten the law enforcement that got hurt. I feel bad for that. And also, I feel my heart goes out to the wife.
Right. And, you know, our heart does go out. And I gave you the last word, but I do want to say I feel for you. I feel for the family. I hope this works out well. And I do feel bad for whoever pulled the trigger, because they're obviously suffering too. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that was not their intentions. I hope that was not their intentions. So with that said, Ms. Bianca, you're going to take us out with pride, honor, and glory, right?
Absolutely. National anthem a cappella.
Say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets red glare, the bombs burst.
It's not going anywhere.
Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave for the land of the free and the home of God?
Use your voice, let it be heard. Use your voice, tonight he hears you. Use your voice.
Thank you for listening to The Hostile Zone, because in Cincinnati's zone, I hear everything, everywhere. For everyone else, see you next Monday for more outrageous talk, where we pull back the curtain and hold no punches. From me to you, have a great week. And remember, everyone, treat others kind. Treat your family kinder, and always love our country.
That's right. Sonati heard you.